She doubted it. After all, disorientation was the entire purpose of this technology. Sensory deprivation tanks had been around since the 50s and were still a popular getaway for wealthy New Age experimenters. Floating, as it was called, offered a transcendental back-to-the-womb experience, a kind of meditative aid that quieted brain activity by removing all sensory input, light, sound, touch, and even the pull of gravity. In traditional tanks, the person would float on his back in a hyperbuoyant saline solution that kept his face above the water so he could breathe. In recent years, however, these tanks had taken a quantum leap. Oxygenated perfluorocarbons. This new technology, known as total liquid ventilation, TLV, was so counterintuitive that few believed it existed. Breathable liquid. Liquid breathing had been a reality since 1966, when Leland C. Clark successfully kept alive a mouse that had been submerged for several hours in an oxygenated perfluorocarbon. In 1989, TLV technology made a dramatic appearance in the movie The Abyss, although few viewers realized that they were watching real science. Total liquid ventilation had been born of modern medicine's attempts to help premature babies breathe by returning them to the liquid-filled state of the womb. Human lungs, having spent 9 months in utero, were no strangers to a liquid-filled state. Perfluorocarbons had once been too viscous to be fully breathable, but modern breakthroughs had made breathable liquids almost the consistency of water. The CIA's Directorate of Science and Technology, the Wizards of Langley as they were known within the intelligence community, had worked extensively with oxygenated perfluorocarbons to develop technologies for the U.S. military. The Navy's elite deep ocean diving teams found breathing oxygenated liquid rather than the usual Heliox or Trimix gave them the ability to dive to much greater depths without risk of pressure sickness. Similarly, NASA and the Air Force had learned that pilots equipped with a liquid breathing apparatus rather than a traditional oxygen tank could withstand far higher G-forces than usual because liquid spread the G-force more evenly throughout the internal organs than gas did. Sato had heard that there were now extreme experience labs where one could try these total liquid ventilation tanks, meditation machines, as they were called. This particular tank had probably been installed for its owner's private experimentation, although the addition of heavy lockable latches left little doubt in Sato's mind that this tank had also been used for darker applications, an interrogation technique with which the CIA was familiar. The infamous interrogation technique of waterboarding was highly effective because the victim truly believed he was drowning. Sato knew of several classified operations in which sensory deprivation tanks like these had been used to enhance that illusion to terrifying new levels. A victim submerged in breathable liquid could literally be drowned. The panic associated with the drowning experience usually made the victim unaware that the liquid he was breathing was slightly more viscous than water. When the liquid poured into his lungs, he would often black out from fear and then awaken in the ultimate solitary confinement. Topical numbing agents, paralysis drugs, and hallucinogens were mixed with the warm oxygenated liquid to give the prisoner the sense he was entirely separated from his body. When his mind sent commands to move his limbs, nothing happened. The state of being dead was terrifying on its own, but the true disorientation came from the rebirthing process, which, with the aid of bright lights, cold air, and deafening noise, could be extremely traumatic and painful. After a handful of rebirths and subsequent drownings, the prisoner became so disorientated that he had no idea if he was alive or dead, and he would tell the interrogator absolutely anything. Sato wondered if she should wait for a medical team to extract Langdon, but she knew she didn't have time.
"I need to know what he knows." "Turn out the lights," she said, "and find me some blankets."
The blinding sun had vanished. The face had also disappeared. The blackness had returned, but Langdon could now hear distant whispers echoing across the light years of emptiness. Muffled voices, unintelligible words. There were vibrations now, as if the world were about to shake apart. Then, it happened. Without warning, the universe was ripped in two. An enormous chasm opened in the void, as if space itself had ruptured at the seams. A grayish mist poured through the opening, and Langdon saw a terrifying sight. Disembodied hands were suddenly reaching for him, grabbing his body, trying to yank him out of his world.
No!
He tried to fight them off, but he had no arms, no fists. Or did he? Suddenly he felt his body materializing around his mind. His flesh had returned, and it was being seized by powerful hands that were dragging him upward.
No! Please!
But it was too late. Pain racked his chest as the hands heaved him through the opening. His lungs felt like they were filled with sand.
I can't breathe.
He was suddenly on his back on the coldest, hardest surface he could imagine. Something was pressing on his chest, over and over, hard and painful. He was spewing out the warmth.
I want to go back.
He felt like he was a child being born from a womb. He was convulsing, coughing up liquid. He felt pain in his chest and neck, excruciating pain. His throat was on fire. People were talking, trying to whisper, but it was deafening. His vision was blurred and all he could see was muted shapes. His skin felt numb, like dead leather. His chest felt heavier now.
Pressure. I can't breathe.
He was coughing up more liquid. An overwhelming gag reflex seized him, and he gasped inward. Cold air poured into his lungs, and he felt like a newborn taking his first breath on Earth. This world was excruciating. All Langdon wanted was to return to the womb. Robert Langdon had no idea how much time had passed. He could feel now that he was lying on his side, wrapped in towels and blankets on a hard floor. A familiar face was gazing down at him, but the streams of glorious light were gone. The echoes of distant chanting still hung in his mind. Verbum significatium, verbum omnificum.
Professor Langdon,
someone whispered.
Do you know where you are?
Langdon nodded weakly, still coughing. More important, he had begun to realize what was going on tonight. Chapter 113. Wrapped in wool blankets, Langdon stood on wobbly legs and stared down at the open tank of liquid. His body had returned to him, although he wished it had not. His throat and lungs burned. This